we're beginning to apply AI in understanding the operations of the manufacturing environment for simple things like predictive maintenance, right? What are the signals that something is actually wearing out and needs to be serviced? Well, I think AI is going to be the technology that makes our world more accessible to more people.
Welcome to Ask More of AI, a podcast looking at the intersection of AI and business. I'm Clara Shai, CEO of Salesforce AI, and I'm thrilled to be sitting here today with Barbara Humpton, CEO of Siemens US. Barbara, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Clara, it's so great to be with you.
You are the CEO of Siemens US. Siemens was just named one of Time's best companies in the world, one of the top 10 based on revenue, employees, and social impact. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's an incredible recognition.
And, you know, it's for me, being a software person, I'm always amazed by companies like Siemens that runs the physical world. And maybe just to talk about, you know, given Siemens' long history of doing that since the mid-1800s, what is the state of affairs today, and how is AI transforming your business?
Well, I like to think back to those founding days. What must it have been like? Werner von Siemens and his brother started a company. If there had been a garage in those days, if they had been invented, it would have been a garage startup. But instead, in a stable in Berlin.
In a stable. That beats a garage.
Don't you think? But that startup mentality, what they focused on were the technologies that were relevant for the day. And they were instrumental in global communications, laying transcontinental communication lines that, you know, that transformed the way we connected as societies all around the world. They got involved in transportation, so on and so forth. They were, essential with the dynamo that helped bring the electric grid to life.
So, incredible.
Right. Electrification, automation, digitalization, these are the themes that drive Siemens. And so fast forward 170, almost 77 years later, here is this, you know, startup mentality that says, what's relevant now? And a few years ago, the company actually looked ahead, said, in the year 2050, what will be the things that will say they drove the world? 5 megatrends were identified: climate change, urbanization, the aging demographics of people everywhere.
Interesting.
The ever more global supply chain, which now we think of as glocal. Right. We could get into that if you're interested. And the digitalization of everything. All of this to say, the global megatrends that have been driving us drive the real world to a new potential. If we bring the real and the digital world together, we unleash the power of technology, this internet of people that's been created over the last 20, 30 years. We bring all of that to the internet of things, which is orders of magnitude bigger. And we all have the opportunity to live better, to live more effectively, to live more sustainably. That's our purpose with our technology.
It is fascinating. I mean, here we are in Silicon Valley where new companies are getting started every day and some companies aren't making it. And here is Siemens, 177 years old, operating in this incredible scale, but at a startup pace. How is that possible?
One of the things that's critical to keeping a startup mentality is truly believing in empowerment. Now, Siemens is a global entity, as you say, and things are happening all around the world. And it's very much the same things happening all around the world, but maybe at different times, maybe with a different cultural spin, et cetera. And so at Siemens, like many companies, we have this, think of it as almost like a three-dimensional matrix. You know, one dimension is who's your customer. Another dimension is what region are you in? And a third is what technology are you focused on? And so every single day we're balancing that equation of I'm working on a technology for a customer in a region and then advancing as fast as we can, but asking where else? Where else can we be deploying what we're learning? And what you see is a company that reacts pretty rapidly to the need to change the portfolio. Mergers and acquisitions have been the lifeblood of this organization as we've identified capabilities that are needed to address those megatrends that form the backbone of our strategy.
And how does that work? I mean, you've got this U.S. organization. The company is headquartered in Germany.
Yeah.
How much of your time do you spend with corporate and global, your global peers versus focused on the U.S.?
Well, I would tell you I'm in touch with my global peers every single day. You know, you'll pull up my email and you'll see all kinds of addresses from global colleagues. And I will tell you, it's probably one of those things that maybe helped us through those pandemic years, because we were already really well connected globally through virtual means. But yeah, the action is here in the U.S. And so this is very much a two-way street. Signals from the market to help global decision makers decide, oh, what are my priorities, where to put resources, and then messages from global about, hey, you know, here's something new we're going to be doing. And a quick example is we just announced in third quarter earnings a month or so ago that one of the things we'd be doing is creating some work streams across the company to help drive some new perspectives, one of them being foundational technologies. And so putting someone in place globally to work on what are the underlying technical architectures that support the building blocks for the technologies that connect the real and the digital world, right?
Interesting.
That's a new muscle for us, because we've been really empowering individual businesses. Now we're putting this global thread through it all. And what that's going to do is help all of us move faster.
Okay, so you said earlier a term that I've not heard of before, glocal.
Yes.
Can you explain that?
Yeah, glocalization. You know that the last several decades were about globalization, the idea that, you know, we were seeking the optimal cost. You know, what can we do to shave the next penny out of the cost of producing something that we're all going to use? And what it's led to is a pretty brittle supply chain. What if we had the ability to make more close to the point of demand? What if we could empower regional supply chains? Turns out the digital tools that we've been working on for the last decade make that possible. So if you're a creator and you have a design for a new, oh gosh, what are we working on right now? I'll give an example. We've got a battery manufacturer who says, I've got operations in South Korea, and I want to bring those operations into the U.S. Well, you're able to, in essence, take the digital twin of the product, the digital twin of the production environment. You can actually use that same formula, if you will, that recipe, and produce in the United States. Now, cast your mind forward and say, what are the implications of all this? I see a future where the Siemens Tools Team Center and NX get used by creators to capture their ideas, their IP, and serve them up to a public, very much like Spotify does for musical artists. People would be able to download designs and actually produce them if needed through additive manufacturing or even, you know, classical manufacturing. I'm excited about the fact that what we're doing is taking advantage of global innovation, but allowing for local production. What that means is that we can actually build economies anywhere in the world.
That's so mind-blowing. I love that.
The technology that you're working on is making that possibility real.
That's so interesting. What are the biggest industries and segments in the U.S. that you focus on?
Yeah. If you were to peel back the hood on the U.S. business, you'd see a large, thriving, and growing smart infrastructure sector. The electrification of everything means that we need the electrical switchgear that, you know, steps down voltage from high voltage power plants, you know, power transmission down to the medium voltage and low voltage, ultimately being delivered into, say, the data centers that we're using to, yes, host all of our data. But also the electric grid is changing because we're bringing on electric vehicles. Mm. Buildings are becoming much more connected and smart. And what's exciting about this space is the evolution of the grid edge, you know, where electricity meets its users. That's where we have our know-how. And so that business is, as I say, one of the most exciting in our economy right now. I keep saying to everybody at the White House, hey, the economy can only grow as fast as the grid. So
it's true,
right? Let's all pay attention to power production, but let's make use of every electron that's being generated. And here we are as Siemens working to bring the software and hardware to make that happen. Now, look to the right, and what you'll see is colleagues in digital industries. These are the world leaders in the hardware and software used in the manufacturing environment. And you could look at just about anything that gets made in the United States. All the big auto manufacturers, all of the semiconductor manufacturers. Wow, now we've got battery manufacturing coming to the U.S. All of these are in focus for our digital industries team. And what they're doing is bringing the digital twin, software-defined automation, and then the ability to use data and especially dip into AI, which I know we're going to get to.
Yes, I want to ask you about that next.
Not until I've told you about high-speed rail. I mean, if you're not following this story, this is so much
Tell
fun.
Us everything.
The third big business in Siemens in the U.S. is rail. And we've been building trains in Sacramento, California for, 40 years. And the next phase is high-speed. The very first line that will be constructed is Brightline West. It goes from L.A. to Las Vegas. And Siemens has been named the preferred bidder. We've just announced our manufacturing site. And what we look forward to is by 2028, being able to hop on that train. I'll meet you in the party car, Clara.
I look forward to it.
And we'll make a 2-hour trip from city to city.
How fun. So everywhere we look around us, the building that we're in right now, the power lines outside, the trains that we go on, I mean, it's all powered by Siemens.
It's incredible. And by the way, Salesforce Tower, one of our most proud moments. So Siemens Smart Infrastructure is working with you every day.
I appreciate that. So how do you encourage people at the company to learn AI?
I would tell you that Siemens has been working in this field for decades and, you know, really trying to keep in lockstep with the development of the technology, beginning with, you know, the simple, we used to refer to things as machine learning, and now, you know, just wholeheartedly getting into what's evolved with large language models, et cetera. And so let me describe in a couple of phrases. You know, one is, inside Siemens, how do we use AI? I use it personally, right? If I'm preparing for a meeting, what do I know about large format 3D printing, right? It turns out I've been to plenty of meetings, I've seen lots of presentations, and then our team has done a lot of work on that. I try to end every meeting at Siemens, if we end a few minutes early, I like to ask whatever team I'm meeting with, so tell me how you're using AI. And I keep finding the most remarkable things. Everything from the finance team who said, well, the balance sheet that we just reviewed was what we actually built a predictive model to say, what should the balance sheet say? And instead of comparing last quarter to this quarter, we compared this quarter's computation to what did AI say it was going to be? You know, it's those kind of miraculous things that are in our day-to-day operation.
It's such a great example of role modeling what is important. But you're not telling anybody what to do. You're just asking them. And that creates this norm around change and learning.
Yes, lean into it.
I love that.
Well, in fact, our internal learning systems are powered by AI. So we've had this incredible My Learning World platform we've been able to use. And so if you're interested in something, we can actually just create our own adventures. And I'm really interested in this and what you all have done with your Trailblazers, because I really do think this is going to be the next step for how we expand our impact in the U.S. market. I think if we focus first on educating the workforce that will be using our technology, bringing those people into this world of exciting application of these new tools, then we're going to move faster. Think about the manufacturing world. I don't know, Clara, if you've spent much time in factories.
I haven't. I want to, because I'm curious.
Come with me sometime.
Okay. Will you give me a tour?
To come visit a few sites, because what you may find in, say, a large automotive facility is that one of the most useful tools is a bicycle or a golf cart. Because literally people are moving from place to place. I've got to program my machines, et cetera, et cetera. And what Siemens has been able to do is bring cloudification to the technology that's on the floor. We've been able to enable the automation controllers with software so that we can actually build now more of a control center where things can be remotely managed. Okay, step one, now we have all of the automation controllers networked and accessible. What can we do now with the data that comes off of those? And we're beginning to apply AI in understanding the operations of the manufacturing environment for simple things like predictive maintenance, right? What are the signals that something is actually wearing out and needs to be serviced? Being able to program one of our PLCs, a programmable logic controller, by just talking to it. And a natural language translation then into the code that would be needed.
Wow.
Clara, I just think where we are today, we're bringing technology to people. I think AI is going to be the technology that makes all of this, makes our world more accessible to more people.
That is incredible. And we're also doing some work together. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, you know, as so, of course, we've had a long relationship with Salesforce.
And thank you for the partnership.
Having your expertise in customer relationship management coupled with Siemens' expertise in the way we handle the industrial environment, bring automation into it, turns out it's a perfect marriage, right? Imagine that manufacturing environment where we now have installed equipment, it's gathering data, we know its status, and something breaks down and it needs service. What happens when the customer reaches out? What's that experience like? Well, it turns out by working with you and actually having agents deployed, we're able then to use everything we know about that equipment, that customer, and tailor the interaction. What used to be a very anonymous, follow the script type of interaction now becomes a very personal and an appropriate one for the situation.
Thank you for being a trailblazer.
Thank you.
It's really been great to partner with you and your team on that. How do you see AI evolving further to bridge the gap between the physical and software worlds?
So here's the thing. What makes AI work is data, right? The question is, how do we get data out of our built infrastructure? Step one has got to be getting it sensored. Sensored, S-E-N-S-O-R-E-D. We're going to have connected devices that enable us to gather information about those physical world things. Now, we do that today in all kinds of ways. I mean, just think about all the gear we carry on ourselves, right? And so we as people have become highly digital. We leave a wonderful digital stream that we're able to use all that data, and then it improves our lives because we now have all kinds of apps that help us.
So all the machines need an Apple Watch.
Every machine needs to have that kind of data feedback capability. That's going to take a while. Of course it's going to take a while, but if we don't get started, we'll never get done. So at Siemens, we're absolutely in the business of let's get connected and let's get connected fast.
And what does that look like? Is it retrofitting existing equipment? Is it having to upgrade?
It takes multiple shapes. First of all, yes, if customers take advantage of the Siemens technology, what they're going to find is this very digitally enabled whole suite of products. That's fantastic. But here in the U.S. in particular, it's been a century or more of industrialization, and there are lots of brownfield, you know, sites where the real trick is to come in and put in a layer. Think about building a data blanket. So how could we add sensors to the manufacturing line? Yes. How could we bring in some more connected controllers, et cetera? But it doesn't have to be open heart surgery. It can actually be a very incremental path. And customers can make choices about, hey, where do I want to get started? Here's the incredible thing about it is that once customers start gathering data from their own operations, they discover that it drives a much more rapid ROI for their investments. In the manufacturing world, most people look for capital expenditures that will yield a return in 18 months, 2 years. We're working with an auto manufacturer today who brought us in on a project to bring in both that, you know, the data capture, as well as then the systems that would apply AI to help them solve a particular problem, quality control on a line. And what they discovered is not only did they solve the quality control problem, they also got all those early insights into the performance of the machines that were producing the product. And the ROI was 3 months. So this is the art of the possible as we start to transform.
Knowledge is power.
It is.
We often talk about our trust layer and the ethical guardrails that are required from a software standpoint. How do you think about the ethical and safety of AI in industrial machinery?
Well, very much like you, we've developed guardrails. It's interesting because in the worlds we're dealing with, whether it's industry, transportation, buildings, you find that people don't need access to large data lakes. They need data puddles, right? They need to be in kind of very well prescribed bodies of data that are relevant to the problems they're trying to solve. And it's really cool because we don't get into some of the issues that we get into in today, you know, sort of general AI. We're able to, by controlling the data set, we're able to then control the kind of where data gets proliferated. And then we can ask really specific questions. And if I'm a manufacturer, I may choose to say, hey, I want you operating just on my data. And believe it or not, the data coming out of manufacturing environments is big enough, statistically accurate enough, right, that you really can use the models effectively. But there are some customers who go further and say, hey, I'm comfortable with you taking my data, pooling it in an anonymous way with others, and then helping me to learn from the general community. A simple example is what happens in healthcare when it's time to read the images that come out of Siemens imaging equipment. It turns out AI has been a game changer, enabling people to learn from literally years of image collection, doing jobs that no human could possibly do, but helping every human be more effective in the real work that needs to be done, which is diagnosis or treatment. That same thing applies now in our manufacturing worlds. And Clara, this is what I really wanted to talk about with you. So both your company and mine are in a position where we're bringing technology to the table. And it's our customers who have the data that on which we can operate. I mean, that's how we're effective, is living in that world, having the privilege of getting access to that, I'll call it sovereign data. And what you all have done at Salesforce is create the tools that ensure we preserve our customers' trust in the way we handle that data.
Yes.
And so I really want to learn from you about kind of what you're learning from the as you've rolled out with others besides Siemens, and what's next? What are the things we have to be on the lookout for?
It's such an important question. I feel really proud to work at Salesforce because the company's number one value has always been trust. And it's not just words on a wall. The company really lives and breathes this. And I feel proud that every AI feature we've ever developed, there's been someone from our ethical and humane use team that's part of that scrum team, that software scrum team, making sure that they're thinking through all the potential adverse effects, data privacy, data security. And so the way we think about it is, you know, unlike consumer companies out there, some of the consumer companies, we really believe that our customers' data should never be our product. And so that's why we architected everything about Salesforce to have metadata and to have multi-tenancy, is to create that separation across each of our customers. And I just think it's a really important time, especially now with all these large language models being sued for copyright infringement and data that you put into the prompt leaking into the model. It's just creating these uncomfortable and unethical situations that, you know, in the enterprise business, we would never do that.
I think we would, I'd appreciate it if we can get our teams together for some specific deep dives into this question, because we're at a moment where we recognize that there's a lot of good we could drive if we could actually, you know, learn from multiple customers, learn from the data that they're now producing, be able to drive decision-making across that, be able to give recommendations back for best practices, for effective techniques, for discoveries, right, that might be helpful to all. But we've got some deep questions about, is that really our place?
Yeah. It's a really great question. There's different types of data. For example, the actual customer data that sits in Salesforce is always, it's proprietary to each company. But there's data, for example, around spam and bad actors, right? That's usually an area where customers are very willing to opt in and share with each other because it makes the entire system better. Another example of, metadata or the first derivative of data is around search results and relevancy, right? No one's actually looking at what you're clicking on, but you're getting the signal on was what was served up as a search results, was that accurate? And so over time, customers opting into that, as many of our customers have, it just makes the whole system better without ever exposing the actual underlying data.
This is a theme that keeps coming up. I mean, literally hearing from CEOs who say, I won't do business with some of the other players because I don't trust them not to use my data.
It's a very important question to ask these days. And unfortunately, it's not something that we can take for granted.
Yeah.
You started your career 27 years at Lockheed Martin and IBM. You have made a career out of working on cutting edge innovation. Can you talk about some of those earlier innovations you worked on and how you've put yourself in that position in your career?
Yeah, thanks. I was going to be a math professor like my parents. Both of my parents were math professors. The big fun at my house was when my mom would come home with some new thing she was going to show her students, and she first wanted to try it out on us kids.
How fun.
Yes. I'll never forget. I mean, I'm old, so I'll never forget my dad coming home with the first computer printout, the big, big block letters, happy birthday.
I remember that too.
Right? Those punch. Yes. No, you don't. Because you're way younger than I am.
With the paper, with the
you
holes.
You do remember that. Yes, okay. So that was the world I was born into. And I went to Wake Forest studying math, and I got recruited by IBM. They were recruiting math majors by the dozens. Let's put you to work in this newfangled thing called computer programming. And I got to work on a project that helped end the Cold War.
So wow. That's a big one for your resume.
Classified, but I feel incredibly proud of the work we did and the impact that it had.
That's incredible.
Well, I went from there to working on the global positioning system, the ground control segment. So, IBM back in the day, and they said, there's this new thing, it's called GPS. There's going to be a space system, space segment, satellites. We don't make satellites. We're not going to do that. And there's this thing called the ground control segment. We are computer people. Yeah, this would be a good thing for us to bid on. And there's this thing called the user segment. But who's ever going to use GPS? Like five guys at the Air Force.
So funny in retrospect.
Little did they know. But I got to work on the ground control segment, and that's what keeps this constellation flying. And I remember even then, but this was back in the 80s, 90s, in the 1990s, going to a meeting where we were shown, here's the life cycle plan. And a date that I saw on a chart was 2025. And at the time, I remember thinking, oh, I'm going to be retired by then. So once again, little did I know. But then I had the privilege of working with Customs and Border Protection just as they were formed and worked on border security. How do you apply technology? The Customs had always taken paper bills of lading and customs forms at borders. What if they digitized that? What if we went to an online system?
Thank you. I was so sick of filling those out.
That's right. So now suddenly we have data. What could we do with that data to understand risk post 9/11? Are there people trying to sneak things into the country? And it was phenomenal to see how the heroes of Border Patrol and the Customs Service worked together to really secure the transport of cargo across our borders. And then ultimately, by this time, IBM had sold their business to Lockheed Martin. And my last assignment there was with the law enforcement community. And we were working on biometrics. Lockheed Martin had been the winner for the FBI years ago on an automated fingerprint identification system, and the time had come to upgrade. The question is, what else do we need to be doing? And they knew that they wanted to use a better fingerprint algorithm, a palm algorithm, facial, iris. And I had met some innovators in DNA and said, well, what about DNA? And they said, oh, that's decades away. Well, rapid DNA analysis was coming onto the scene in the healthcare community. You know, can we identify markers for certain diseases? And so we scratched our heads and said, how hard would it be to identify the five loci that absolutely uniquely identify a person?
Incredible. I feel like I'm in a sci-fi movie.
Well, years later, I ultimately had left Lockheed Martin by the time the director of the FBI was testifying to Congress and said one of the revolutionary new technologies they were using was rapid DNA analysis.
Just incredible.
So, I mean, I'm like you, right? Aren't you entranced by the changes in technology and the fast pace of the world we're living in and this kind of innovation?
I am. And it's another level to be the leader of such a large organization as you are. How do you get all 45,000 employees you have in Siemens US thinking the same way and learning everything that they need to learn now about data and AI?
Well, can I vouch for all 45,000? I doubt it. I mean, when you look across our 45,000, you see an incredible array of what I think one of the things I'm most excited about is that we now have six generations in the workforce, right?
Wow.
The newest generation has just peeked their head up and come in for internships. And so we're all there, everything from manufacturing to the things we do in our offices to the things people do and service to our customers on their sites. It's truly an eye-watering display of talent. What we decided to do as a company when it comes to sort of guiding people along this path of where are we headed was keep it simple. The global corporation has just four priorities. There's customer impact, there's technology with purpose, and as we work on AI, I love talking to folks, especially in policy, about AI with purpose, because, right, it brings it all home where you go, oh, there is a way for us to be deploying this for the promise that it has while avoiding the peril. So customers, technology, but then two that relate to us as people. One is a growth mindset. Really encouraging people to attend to their own lifelong learning. And then finally, empowerment. And as we talked about, you know, this idea that each of us are nodes in an incredible network and networks beat hierarchies every day, right? We're counting on people owning their position, understanding that without that position, the company doesn't operate. And without that position, we don't get the right information to others in the network who need to also play their own positions. So all of us, players on the field, communicating with each other daily. Now, I will tell you, I started something a couple years ago, which is a Friday morning meeting, no charts, no agenda, with the people who are running the biggest businesses and the biggest functions in Siemens USA. And at first I thought, are people going to consider this to be a waste of time? It turns out it's a cannot miss meeting because we learn from each other. Hey, what'd you do this week? I mean, when I get to tell them on Friday morning that Jim Cramer introduced me to Matthew McConaughey last night at dinner, it's going to blow their minds. And it's not all just, you know, telling great stories from the road. It's actually aligning on, hey, what are the things we're seeing and hearing? What are the things we need to be focused on as leaders? All of that we do as a team.
That's fascinating. How many people are on the call?
I try to keep it to no more than everyone gets a square on the Teams meeting. Right. I want everybody to feel like we're in the same room together. And it's not you get called on and get pulled onto camera. No, no, no. These are the eight or nine people who are running this business and who need to be in really tight communication with each other.
That's so smart. So we talked about upskilling the current workforce. As we think about the next generation, How do you think we should approach education differently so that they're well-equipped for this AI era?
Well, hey, listen, when you kind of get down to fundamentals and you ask yourself, what are the skills we need for the future? We at Siemens actually had a session pre-pandemic. We had a session at one of our research and development hubs, Princeton, New Jersey. There, it's close to Rutgers, Princeton, et cetera. And we sat down with a couple of academic experts, along with people from businesses, et cetera, to ask the question, what are those skills that we need to be developing for the future? And I was stunned. The answer was curiosity and initiative. Well, when you get right down to it, you realize you can learn anything if you're curious enough to go do it. Now, of course, the second part of that is not to, you know, examine its beauty, but to actually get up off the sofa and get to work.
Yeah.
So curiosity and initiative seem to be the two things. How we teach that, I think, comes with a lot of early interaction. So I love what's been creeping into colleges for sure, lots of team projects. All of that is working its way back into a K through 12 education. But what we've been focused on actually is the community college network, because we've got this firm belief that a lot of what needs to be done for us to have a healthy infrastructure and industry in the future might take more than a high school diploma, but less than a college degree. So what we're trying to do is introduce young people to the technologies we're helping to bring into the world, hoping they'll get curious and take the initiative to get involved.
That's so great, because it also levels the playing field for people who might not be able to afford a four-year degree.
I think this next couple of decades, we're going to find that workforce is what gates our growth. I mean, it's true that right now it's the power grid, right? How much can we build? How much can we actually accomplish in the U.S. economy? A lot of it depends on how much power we can produce. Right after that is, what about people? And it's the people behind the technology that will get it done.
So you hire students right out of college or community college?
We do. We hire kids out of high school. We have programs we've put together where we're collaborating with community colleges for an apprenticeship-like program. I'll call it apprenticeship with an American accent. And we're finding that to be really successful.
What kinds of jobs?
In our EV manufacturing hub in Wendell, North Carolina, we have kids coming in and learning how to build chargers. You know, they're learning the basics of electrical engineering at the same time. The coolest thing about this is when you see someone enter our workforce that way, what you notice is they continue their education. And we've had apprentices come in at the high school level who've gone on and earned their college degrees. They've become managers within our organization. It's
life-changing.
It's phenomenal. But the thing I may be more excited about is the people mid-career who've said, I want to do something different. I want to do something that has purpose. And bringing people in, and often it's bringing people in from the sidelines. One of the demographics I'm most interested in is women who perhaps have had children who thought they had to step out of the workforce, and in doing so thought they'd missed the train.
I have a number of friends like that.
How could I possibly get involved again? What I keep saying to people is, no. The technology's changing so fast, and how we work is changing so fast. Join us. Join us as soon as you feel comfortable. And, you know, by the way, it's not just women these days. It's men, too, right? Join us. And now that careers are lasting decades longer than they used to, it's not too late. Get started.
And how great that there's more manufacturing jobs coming back to the U.S.
That's exactly right.
Well, Barbara, thank you so much for your tremendous leadership, and thank you for the partnership. It's so great to have your insights.
Well, thanks for the chance to talk today, Claire. These are my favorite subjects.
What an amazing conversation. I feel like she's the most interesting person in the world. Three takeaways for me. Number one is that we are on the precipice of the digital world connecting to the physical world, and AI and data playing a key role in making that happen. Number two is that you don't necessarily need a four-year degree anymore to find an amazing career. Lots of people are being hired by Siemens right out of community college and finding meaningful careers. Last but not least, Barbara believes that the most important skills for the future are curiosity and initiative. That's all for this week on the Ask More of AI podcast. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts. and follow me on LinkedIn and X. To learn more about Salesforce and AI, check out our Ask More of AI newsletter on LinkedIn. Thank you, and see you next time.